Hello. Yes, this is the Hot Tag, a brand new episode, as it were. Just to let everybody know, I was gone for a couple weeks for two things. One, the Phillies were in the World Series, so literally all my nights were completely taken up. And two, all three of us, our schedules are literally all over the place. For the most part, George. So hopefully that's going to be changing very soon. So excited to let everybody know that we are back on schedule. Last week was supposed to be Survivor Series 2000, did not get to that, but we will probably, I'll be like a bonus episode, maybe before we head out of here at the end of the month. But tonight, it's a doozy we got for you guys here. We are covering Survivor Series 2001. This took place from the Greensboro Coliseum, Crockett Country, in Greensboro, North Carolina, November 18th, 2001. This pay-per-view did 450,000 buys, which is great. However, only 9,150 people are here. I think the WWF made an awful decision to hold this pay-per-view here in North Carolina. I just felt like it deserved a much larger menu, a bigger market, but still for 9,000 people, it did have a about a $504,000 gate. It was the lowest gate of the year, but I mean, naturally when you only have 9,000 people, it's probably going to be your lowest gate. To kind of compare, the 2000 Survivor Series did 50,000 less buys, but they had a live gate of 780 grand. And that's because of the venue. There were 16,000 people in Tampa Bay. So just crazy how, you know, this is the 15th anniversary of Survivor Series. And I'll ask you, George, it's not like the Horsemen or anybody were in this show. Thank God. But why would they hold such a massive pay-per-view like this in Greensboro, North Carolina, where they know they're not going to get more than 10,000 people?
Because Vince McMahon is petty.
Makes total sense.
That's my whole answer, because to me that's the only thing that would make sense. Mm-hmm. Is that he's going to drive the final nail in WCW, basically in WCW country.
Makes sense. Makes total sense.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
I was going to say the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's literally what it was. That was mm-hmm. like when he brings Sting back just to be like, well, pal, it's the final nail in the WCW coffin 20 years later. Such good shit.
This is the 15th annual Survivor Series, which, you know, everything was on the line, as they say. I mean, sort of. I mean, that was the idea. Vince McMahon's beloved World Wrestling Federation dealt with an invasion from Vince's own children, his own seed, with Shane McMahon owning WCW and Stephanie McMahon owning ECW. This angle started around June of 2001. That year, they had a very successful, although the pay-per-view was terrible, invasion in July of 2001 was massive business. Other than WrestleMania that year, Invasion was WWF's biggest show. And here they were just 4 months later wrapping things up with Team WWF versus Team Alliance, with the future of the company on the line. We are going to dig deeper at some point next year in 2023 into the invasion. You know, that's something that I think has been talked about in the past, but I don't think it's really had a deep dive into what invasion could have been. And I feel like it could have been one, they could have waited another year or so to do it. And two, I think if you would have waited a year, the opportunities would have been something of lore. Like, we would have been still talking about probably today. If they would have just waited a year, that's mm-hmm. like Shawn Michaels comes back. You know, that the NWO comes back in 2002. So you have Hogan, Nash, and Hall. You know, you could have had Rey Mysterio. If you just would have held out a little chunk of time, what could have been for a real invasion angle? But, you know, Vince is, you know, go, 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 go. I mean, the frigging guy purchased his WCW the week of WrestleMania 17. So it's like, well, I mean, they don't have anyone. They don't even have Goldberg. I mean, mm-hmm. so that piece of shit Goldberg. So we will eventually do a deep dive into the invasion and what could have been, because I think that's something fun to even, I guess you can quote unquote fantasy book, which is going to be fun. Another big thing that with this pay-per-view is a major, you know, quad injury meant that Triple H was out of this show. You know, that hurt a lot because he was so dominant and just so legendarily badass in 2000 and right into 2001 before he got hurt. You know, I think they would have used this angle to probably turn him into a babyface to go with The Rock, which would have been incredible to see. Because if you look at Team WWF here, I feel, and I, you know, this is no disrespect to Chris Jericho, but I just felt like that spot was supposed to be for Triple H. Do you agree with that, George Dean?
Probably, yeah.
Maybe I would say maybe the spot that Big Show had, because he really served no purpose in that final match.
That's a good point. That's a good point. We'll get to that. You know, I thought 2001 was a very strong year for WWE. There's just so many, you know, great pay-per-view events, including, you know, WrestleMania 17, which is arguably to many people the greatest WrestleMania and pay-per-view of all time. I just wish that the booking of this invasion was just better. And I wish it was postponed for a year. But, you know, this was also the last year when the company was called the WWF. They retired World Wrestling Federation in May of 2002. So not much longer here that we have this name. Now let's go. The video package shows highlights of the history of the WWF because they were trying to tell us that this is a serious threat that could end the company. Yet Vince owns everything. The End Is Near song is played. They used that quite a few times between 2000 and 2002. The pyro went off in Greensboro and it was packed. I mean, all, you know, 480 people. Jim Ross is on commentary with Paul Heyman for the last time, as JR noted. Heyman was from the Alliance and JR was with WWF. So whoever lost was gone, or, you know, so they said. The reason why Jerry Lawler was not there is he left the company for most of this year after his wife, one of them, the Cat, was unhappy and quit. Lawler was back right after this show because, he got a divorce. So he rejoined Jim Ross on commentary. Again, guys, we've talked about this before. How did you guys like the combination of Paul Heyman and Jim Ross?
I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. I've always enjoyed. I mean, I'm a big Paulie guy, so
yeah.
You know, I always have been. So, for me, I thought he's great at everything he does, except for clearly running a business. But no, I loved it. I was always a fan of it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Let's go here. We'll get started. First match is European Championship. Christian, who has an incredible theme song and entrance in 2001.
Some say the best.
So good. Versus Al Snow. The winner by pinfall was Christian. I gave this, you know, 2.5 stars. I thought it was a really good match with a fast pace. The right man won, in my opinion. What did you guys think? I thought it was actually a pretty good match. Again, I always thought Christian was so good. This was at a time where he was definitely finding himself as a solo guy. George, what did you think of 2001's Christian?
I mean, I thought it was a great match because you got two really good workers in Christian, Al Snow. Al Snow, the underrated, is a great worker in ring. And he's done great stuff in OVW, training up a new crop of people and kind of getting the future going. And he's still training now. You know, he's still hops back in the ring every now and then. Mm-hmm. I think he just recently did it in his Leaf Cassidy attire, which I thought was pretty insane. But I mean, yeah, I don't think anybody thought Al Snow was going to win. Mm-hmm. Like, I know we always say, or Chris, I know you always say, you know, everybody was over in 2000, 2001. The crowd really didn't pop for Al Snow.
No, not here.
You know, the problem was they changed his theme song. He didn't come out to the "What Does Everybody Want?" They said no. There was no chant along with it. He had some generic bullshit. But
yeah,
They did chant "We Want Head" at one point during the match.
Well, they were a needy crowd. The WWF champ at the time, Steve Austin, and his lovely wife, Deborah, were shown walking backstage into the arena. They walked into Stone Cold's locker room, and the entire Team Alliance were in the room. Stephanie asked Austin if he's turning on the Alliance because he smiled at Vince on SmackDown. That's where we are here in 2001. Austin said he's not turning against them. Shane said they put everything on the line, and Austin told him to follow the leader. Can I just say here, guys, that watching this promo, I could not stop hysterically laughing at one, the face, like the facials that Austin was making, and the back and forth between he and Kurt Angle. It is just absolutely like it's really hard for me not to start breakout laughing right now, because it's as they're talking to Austin and he's staring at everybody. Kurt Angle is right in his face at the side of his ear. It's like, everything's on the line, Steve, everything. And like, Steve is like really trying not to laugh. And I was just like, oh my God, the connection and chemistry between these two were just uncanny.
Kurt had some great timing.
Kurt, he was just so beyond his time, man. All right, so here we go here. Vince and Linda McMahon are backstage talking about the high stakes in the line for the show. Vince said shit happens, and they bleeped out the shit part.
Mr. McMahon.
I'm sorry, Mr. McMahon. Michael Cole shows up to interview them. Vince said if they lose, then Cole would be out of a job. But Vince said that he was very confident they will win. Vince talked about how he built an empire by taking calculated risks. He said it's a damn near guarantee that they will win. William Regal shows up in a WCW shirt. He said he'll enjoy watching his Alliance team win and enjoy beating up Tajiri. Regal left, so Vince reiterated to Linda that once again, shit happens. Oh, man. Quick little one-liner from the owner there.
Such good shit, pal.
It really is. All right, so what do we got? Okay, yeah, so here we go. William Regal versus Tajiri. Winner by pinfall is William Regal. I mean, I gave it 2 stars because I felt like it was really rushed. But man, they really quote unquote laid their shit in, pal, with this match. And that's usually how things went with William Regal. You know, he had a bloody nose. I think he broke his nose here. Post-match, Regal hit a double underhook powerbomb, which I always liked.
I love it.
Oh, yeah, me too. You know, the Torrey Wilson ran down to ringside to check on Tajiri. Regal went back into the ring, grabbed her by the hair, and hit a double underhook powerbomb on her. That was, you know, and I'm not a huge fan of the man-on-woman violence. I know it was done to get heat and make him look like a jerk, but I felt like it was kind of unnecessary here. At this point, Torrey wasn't really bumping for anyone in matches, but he looked like he took care of her, so that was good. I'll ask you, George, were you a fan?
She was a bumper for Billy Kidman.
That's that, what a salesman that guy is. just a hell of a salesman. What was your, were you a Regal fan?
Yeah. At the time I wasn't, but I've gone back and I appreciate now, like I appreciate now the character and what he was doing. And also, and I texted you this when I was watching it, like the crowd was so hot for Tajiri.
Mm-hmm. Like, they really were.
They just, whenever he did anything, they were on their feet. I'm like, this guy.
Yeah.
I forgot how over Tajiri was.
Yeah. Yep.
Did you notice the poster for this pay-per-view? It was just Lita and Torrey Wilson back to back.
Yes. Yeah.
It didn't make any sense because both of them were on the same side.
I know. That was just eye candy for a poster, which, hey, that's fine. I owned the poster. It was in my room. In 2001.
I bet you did.
Oh, it was. Yes, I did.
It's in your room in 2022.
That's good. I wish. A video package sets up Edge versus Tess with each man holding mid-card titles. Tess won the Intercontinental title from Edge from cheating, and Edge beat Angle for the U.S. title. And then another, just an uncomfortable, awful promo in the back here with Tess. Shown looking in the mirror, as you can tell how much gas he was on, with his droopy nipples and acne all over him.
Cece, those are the giveaways.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Tess was steroids one. Stacey Keebler showed up and he wondered if he wanted to party later. She wished him good luck and left. Tess said, yeah, she wants me. Like, God, just awful stuff in 2001.
What's that about?
He's just, he was like, no wonder he didn't do anything. He was just,
I mean, he did one thing, but
yeah, he did one thing. Yeah. It's crazy because they did date like for real for a few years.
That's a shame.
I know. You know, thankfully she, you know, upgraded to guys like, you know, George Clooney later on in life.
you talk about a salesman.
Absolutely. Edge was interviewed by Jonathan Coachman. Edge noted, easy for me to say. my dad noted that Tess had been dumped by every chick on the planet. title unification match here. Tess with the IC title versus Edge is the U.S. champ here. The winner by pinfall is Edge. Now unifies both the IC and U.S. titles. One, I know you guys don't like Rob Zombie. I don't either. But I was a big fan of this entrance for Edge, and the crowd loved it. Like, he was – this was, like, when I felt like, okay, the crowd is really starting to take Edge serious as a singles guy here. And I just felt like he always had, like, great entrance themes, and I always thought that his entrances were always fun. I hate Rob Zombie, but I always felt like this was a pretty cool song to kind of maybe jumpstart Edge into – maybe Relativity, you know, Relativity. So
I actually completely forgot he used this theme. When it started, I was like, who the hell is this? I completely forgot about it.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually surprised it's still on the network.
Yeah. Like, also, I thought it was kind of funny. I'm jumping ahead a little bit.
That's okay.
But I did find it funny that we have now reviewed two of, I think, the rumored three pay-per-views that had Roland for The Undertaker. Because that came on too, and I was just like,
all right.
It's like twice in 2 months.
Well, don't worry. We're soon
there's one
going.
More.
Yep.
There's one more. We got to find it. Do you know which one it is?
I don't. I got to look it up.
Okay. I'm sure we'll get to it eventually. Unless it's something terrible.
It might even be WrestleMania 17. I'll have to check that. Let me check. I actually gave this match three and a half stars. I had completely forgotten about this match. I was actually really impressed. You know, it told the story of Tess using power for much of it, and Edge found a way to win as, you know, a half the size babyface. Tess wasn't a great in-ring performer. Edge obviously ended up being, you know, a top 10, top 12 guy ever.
I don't think Test was terrible though.
That's what I was going to say. Excuse me. I actually think this match, Test showed that he could go. I thought he was pretty good in this match. George, what did you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think Test had one of the best big boots in the business.
He definitely, that was,
I mean, yeah, that really shit good. Looked good. It looked every single time looked good.
I'm not gonna lie, I was a pretty big fan of Test, like in the Attitude Era and stuff like that. I thought he had a great look, and I thought he was exactly what a big man needed to be. I did think he was pretty much like Vince was like, you know, I need to find somebody who kind of looks like Kevin Nash and kind of acts like Kevin Nash, but isn't as good as Kevin Nash. So I found Test.
Yeah, I mean, he found because he was a bodyguard for Motley Crue. Yeah, that was his claim to fame. Yeah. But I mean, Test is he was a dependable mid-card worker. He was the kind of guy. I mean, although pushed under the right circumstances, he could have been the guy to kind of lead the mid-card. But, you know, with the acquisition of WCW and getting all those other talents in, it's like you're not nearly even close to Chris Benoit, so why don't you sit down? Mm-hmm. We're going to have this guy take over.
Well, they're kind of close now.
Well, I mean, they did get one. I mean, they did have one thing in common.
What is that MJF face you just made, Chris?
I don't know, but
you kind of.
Yeah, what is MJF this face you're doing?
With your scraggly beard and your faux hawk there.
All the love.
But you know, Chris is gonna be wearing Argyle everything.
I am MJF. He means Michael J. Fox.
Oh my god. I'll take that as a compliment.
Well, you could take it two ways. Either you
yes,
can be
true.
You can be 80s Michael J. Fox, or you can be current Michael J. Fox.
Oh, jeez.
I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just saying. I'm not wishing Parkinson's on you.
After this match, Stephanie McMahon was in her locker room. Kurt Angle showed up to talk to her. She said, if they lose, she'll become a regular person. She complained about having to do regular things. So, look, I'm a big fan of Stephanie McMahon, especially from this era and a little bit past that. But her level of acting here was bad. Like, it was just really bad.
So bad.
This was, like, immensely over the top, and it was kind of really cringe to watch. Angle's...
Not as cringe as the fact that Angle kept staring at her tits every time, every time he got a chance.
Yeah.
It's like, Kurt, this is just obvious now.
Like, yeah. This was like shortly after she got her inflatable. So like, he was definitely like, oh, this is fun.
He's like, hey, turkey's done.
Next match here is the tag team title unification steel cage match. WWF tag team champions from the Alliance of the Dudley Boys with Stacy Keibler versus WCW tag champs, the Hardy Boys. Winners by pinfall are the Dudleys. I gave this like 2 or 3 stars because I really do like, I give it like 3 stars. I wrote down here because I always like these teams together. It was a good match like usual. I think it could have been better if it was like a tornado tag match because why the hell you have a tag match with tags? Because... You know, then it would have been way more physical. They could have used the cage more. I just don't understand why they would spend 5 minutes tagging in and then turning it into a tornado tag match after.
In a cage, right.
I mean, the ending of the match told an interesting story with Matt leaving the ring at a time when his brother was left alone. It was I wasn't a huge fan of the finish because Jeff climbs all the way to the top. He could have unified the titles. And no, he just is... high and then just wants to jump off of the top of the cage because that's reasons with Jeff.
I think he assumed he was driving a car.
Oh,
I think it's just one of those things where Jeff Hardy around this time became what they eventually started doing to Shane McMahon, where no matter what show it was or what the consequences were, even if it didn't make sense, Jeff's got to do a big bump. He's got to do a bump somewhere.
I agree. I grew tired of his shtick pretty fast. I'm not gonna lie. It was like, here we go. He's gonna dive through a table. It's just got old. It got old fast. And to be rude, but he's paying for it now.
Oh, he's paying for it.
He's absolutely paying for it now. You can see when he's you can see it in his mugshots.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things he's paying for right now. So it's fines and the toll on his body. But Paul Heyman said at the end of this match, and I texted you, Chris, Jeff Hardy can resist anything but temptation. It's like, at the start of this pay-per-view, Paul Heyman said he was Nostradamus. I don't think he realized how accurate he was.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. There, after the match, there was a shot of WWF New York with Commissioner Mick Foley standing on the stage. Ross asked Foley why he wasn't at the arena. He said that Vince McMahon ordered him there, even though Foley wanted to be there. He was mad and said that being the commissioner is a joke. Foley said if WWF wins, and he'll be in Charlotte for Raw, with some choice words for Vince McMahon. Again, at this time, I was a big fan of Mick Foley as a commissioner. I thought, no matter what Mick did, I felt he took it serious, and this was, no different. So
Chris, were you at WWE New York with your jean jacket and your thumbs up in every picture?
No, I never went to, I don't think I ever went there.
No.
jacket.
Next match is a
Denim Dan there.
Yes. Women's Championship 6-pack challenge, Trish Stratus, Jackie, Lita, Ivory, Mighty Molly, and Jazz. As we can predict who won this was Trish Stratus.
Did you skip over the Immunity Battle Royal?
I did, yeah. Because that's just a lot to talk about. I mean, it was too long.
I mean, you could just tell the people who won it.
I don't even remember who won.
It was Tess.
That's right, Tess won. He came back in.
Yeah, because he attacked Sky Too Hottie. Because
that's right.
Sky Too Hottie has the worst luck in the world when it comes to walking down to the ring for battle royals.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, I remembered the segment when I saw it. I was just like, he's like, oh hey Scott, are you in the battle royal? I was like, oh yeah, he attacks him right here.
Yeah. The best thing about the battle royal was the fact that when Taz came out, Paul Heyman kept talking shit to him, and then when Taz was thrown over the top rope and then like got in Paul's face and Paul like moved behind JR and JR was like, what are you doing, you old broad? You're a woman.
Look, I thought this, I mean, it was okay. Each woman got a chance to show what they could do in the ring. They did the predictable spot with everybody hitting signature moves and nearly winning. Trish got the win, you know, was treated as an upset by JR on commentary. But in terms of star power, I think this was the right time because the crowd loved her and Lita more than anybody else. I mean, when Lita came out, I mean, I'm not joking. I don't think I'm overstating. I think when Lita's entrance came out, she got one of the biggest pops of the night, like of the roster. Lita was big time here in 2001. So, I mean, this was basically the time for Trish and Lita to take over. And so it was the right time for Trish here.
I think they were the two. They're probably the two. I mean, if not the two, like the both of them.
Yeah.
Because twoist isn't a word. But they're probably like the, I think you got to say they're the two biggest women wrestlers in the history of the business.
Yeah. I think, and I've said this before, like on Twitter and stuff, I think Bianca Belair is the best woman wrestler ever. I don't even think it's close, but in terms of like superstar, I mean, it's gotta be Trish one, Lita two. And I think you gotta, unfortunately, you gotta put what, Lita or Sasha three. Oh, not, I'm sorry, Charlotte or Sasha at three. I mean, I would put Sasha there over Charlotte. Then again, I'm sure Dean would put like 50 women over Charlotte.
Correct. I don't want to do that because I don't want Ric Flair to cry about it on Twitter.
Yeah, he's gonna yell at you, Dean, like, oh, I can't believe you put my daughter in your top 50.
Yeah, he's bleeding right now as he's saying it.
And crying.
I mean, listen, I love Rick, but I do agree with you on your sentiment that you said, Chris. It's a little ridiculous. Every time they take him out of the thing, he's like, oh, fucking worst company in the history of the world. And then they put him back. He's like, oh, I've always loved you.
Oh, I love Nick Khan. I love Nick Khan. 3 hours later, that piece of crap. He shouldn't be running that company.
That it's like, piece oh of my crap, but at least he's no Goldberg.
Oh man, this was the first
Bill Goldberg, that piece of shit.
That was the first women's title win for Trish. She went on to win it a record 7 times over the next 5 years. Of course, that's been beaten. I think what, Charlotte's up to like 77, so
something like that.
I think you're lowballing it.
I'm lowballing it there, yeah. In a backstage setting, Vince McMahon did a pep talk for Team WWE, which was The Rock, Chris Jericho, Taker, Kane, and Big Show. Was anybody else like bothered by The Rock that wouldn't stop fucking jumping around? Like, did that bother anybody else?
You like, just hate The Rock now, so that's
your. I love The Rock, but it was just
you're gonna be irritated by everything he does.
It was irritating to me.
You know what really irritated me was the fact that no, I'll save it for the end of the show because it doesn't really have anything to do with this, but it's going to make a booby pants. I know that.
I remember the buildup for this. Originally it was going to be Rock, Jericho, Undertaker, Kane, and Vince, but then randomly on like the next episode of SmackDown, Big Show took his place. And I'm just like, why?
I know.
You didn't have anybody else available.
I really liked Kane's attire here.
Me too.
Yeah.
That's my favorite Kane attire.
Gotcha. Yeah. 2001 Kane was a fucking mutant.
Yeah.
I liked this attire. And then of course the inverse with the black, with the red.
Oh yeah.
This was, that was my favorite attire of Kane.
Yeah.
This time period.
You like notice in this promo how massive he is.
Yes.
When you have the Big Show and Taker there and it's like, God, man, Kane is huge.
If you ever wanted to bet on anybody coming back from a long period of time, either through an injury or just taking time off, coming back in ridiculous condition, it was always Kane.
Yeah, always Kane.
Because I remember, like, you know, as the years went on, you know, he would get a little, obviously, I mean, he was always an incredibly in shape guy and still is. But, you know, he would get a little soft, mm-hmm. you know, and then he would be like, and then like Kane would like disappear for like 6 months. And then Glenn would come back and he'd be like ripped to fucking pieces and jacked mm-hmm. more than he's ever been. It's like, oh, okay. Well, that's what Kane does. He,
did you just call him Glenn, Dave?
I did. Excuse me. That's not my name. That's not, yeah. That's not my name.
Oh my god, it's so funny.
I was hoping Chris would like die.
But the best thing about the best thing about Kane coming back is that I would always forget that he was gone.
Yeah.
That's actually a good point. Like I never like kind of realized. Like,
oh, it. Kane's back. I'm like, wait, when did he leave?
Yeah, it's so that promo here took over 5 minutes. It was a long time. The Team Alliance is shown backstage. A video package aired to set up the winner-take-all match. One of the big moments in the build-up was Kurt joining the Alliance, which I'm sure George will, after I finish this paragraph here, George, I'll let you talk about it. Jericho and The Rock had issues even though they were on the same team. Vince McMahon said somebody is going to turn the Alliance. Austin hit a stunner on Angle even though they were on the same side. There was a final clip of Austin dropping The Rock dropping Austin with a rock bottom on Raw. I thought the buildup was really good. There's a lot of questions about who might turn the Alliance to side with WWE. But before we get to the match, George, your issue with Kurt Angle joining the Alliance?
It didn't make sense to me. It didn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like you didn't need to have somebody turn and join the Alliance. I get it. It was all ploy by Vince, but you should have had it be somebody who was part of WCW.
Yeah.
Like Jericho was already turning heel at that point. So maybe you make it Jericho. So it's like, oh, this makes sense now. Mm-hmm. And then you have Jericho turn on, you know, that sets up whatever, but with it being Kurt, it just didn't make any sense to me.
I agree.
Pointless and then obvious that he was going to be the one to turn back.
Yeah.
Or at minimum, they should have had Big Show because nobody cared about him anyway. It's just a good way to bury his boring ass.
Right. No. He was going to be taken out in the first 5 minutes of this match anyway. There's no fucking point to have him lumber back down to the ring and trip over.
It would have made sense. It would have just been another turn for the Big Show. So who cares, right? Just add it to the list, another check mark. The Alliance was introduced first.
Remember when Paul went to AEW and disappeared off the face of the earth?
no more BS.
Oh, God.
I'm glad he's in the same spot with his career now than he was in WWE when he complained about not being able to wrestle.
Yeah, he's such a
he's calling matches on Elevation, not like you notice.
It just popped into my head because I don't like Big Show.
The Alliance introduced first Shane McMahon, Booker T, Hardcore Champ Rob Van Dam, who got a lot of cheers, Kurt Angle, and then WWF Champ Steve Austin, who received just a huge pop, even though he was a heel. When Austin was in the ring, the fans did the what chant nonstop. Again, I actually liked Austin's music here.
This is the third version, wasn't
it? No, this was his Alliance, his.
Yeah, invasion. It was like some random.
Oh, I don't even think I noticed it when I was watching it. I'll have to go back and listen to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, to be honest, though, this team was a lot better than the WCW Invasion team from 4 months earlier. So that's a step up, I guess. The WWE team, Big Show, Kane, The Undertaker, Chris Jericho, and The Rock, who got a massive pop. Jericho was on his way to being a heel by this point while the others were baby faces. But it was clear that the only person that people cared about here was The Rock. He was just on another level here in 01. So here we go. Winner take all Survivor Series elimination match, Team WWF versus Team Alliance. The first elimination is, of course, The Big Show, eliminated by Shane McMahon. I like that it took three finishers plus Shane's elbow to finish off The Big Show. It made him look, I guess, a lot better than losing after one move, but it's still him losing to Shane McMahon. But whatever. The Rock clothesline on Shane. Kane tagged in and hit a huge choke slam on Shane. Heyman freaked out about it. Undertaker tagged in with a tombstone for Shane. Jericho tagged in with a lion salt and pinned Shane. So Shane McMahon's eliminated by Jericho. Following that, RVD eliminated Kane. And the Undertaker was eliminated by Kurt Angle, which was very surprising to me. RVD was eliminated by Jericho. And then we get down to the match now is between The Rock and Jericho versus Austin and Angle. Angle worked with Jericho in the ring while Austin battled The Rock on the floor, with Austin sending Rock into the ring post slingshot style. Austin's back in for his team and he hits a superplex Angle with a back elbow on Jericho. The Angle and Austin team isolated Jericho for a little bit. Jericho bounced off the ropes for a double clothesline spot. The Rock tagged in against Angle with The Rock hitting an overhead suplex, and he applied the sharpshooter on Angle, who tapped out like almost like suddenly. So Kurt Angle was eliminated by The Rock. I mean, I felt like that was a rushed elimination, George. Was this weird that boom, snap of a finger, Angle taps out to The Rock's like third finishing move?
Hey, I mean, it's Survivor Series. You're going to have that. You're going to have somebody tap him out pretty quick to the sharpshooter. So,
good point. Yeah.
I think it had to do with the fact
25 years, everybody.
I think it had something to do with the fact that Angle was going to turn on the Alliance.
That's a good point. That's good.
I noticed that too. I when I was watching, I was like, oh man, he tapped that pretty fast. I was like, well, he does turn on them tonight. So yeah. That, I would assume that's probably because he was just trying to be like, you know, get out of the match so he can. In terms of storyline and stuff like that. So.
Right. Good point. Austin is the last man for the Alliance. Jericho went for a lion salt on Austin, but Austin got his knees up, leading to a two count. Jericho gets a roll up. Austin turned him over to counter it, and Austin sat on top to pin Jericho. That was enough for an elimination. Jericho was eliminated by Austin. We are down to two with The Rock facing off against Austin. Spine busted by The Rock. Jericho's back in the ring, and he hit the stroke on The Rock to put him down. Face first. Austin was slow to cover The Rock and he kicked out. Taker is coming back down to the ring to prevent Jericho from interfering again. They end up going to the back. And then here we go. Here's the end. Austin and Rock brawl outside of the ring for a bit, with Austin sending The Rock into steel steps. Rock threw Austin over the announce table. They followed with some punches. JR and Heyman were just screaming at each other, with JR telling Heyman to kiss his ass. Back in the ring, Austin hit a spine buster followed by a sharpshooter. After about 30 seconds, The Rock got to the ropes. Austin went for the title. He tried to use it as a weapon, and The Rock tripped him up with a sharpshooter. Austin crawled to the ropes. Got a low blow here by Austin. Austin went for the stunner. Rock caught the boot and hit a stunner of his own. Austin's lip was bleeding. Rock went for a cover. But the Alliance referee, Nick Patrick, pulls Earl Hebner out of the ring and punched him. What a great working punch that was. the Rock went for a move on Patrick, but Austin hit a rock bottom on Rocky. Patrick counted the pin, and it was a two count. The crowd went wild, though, for these near falls. I will say that. They were all on their feet, so it worked perfectly there. Then again, anything that was between The Rock and Austin just always worked. Austin punched, knocked out Patrick to send him out of the ring. Austin brought Hebner back into the ring. Rock shoved Austin and the Hebner. Rock fought out of a rock bottom. He hit Austin with a stunner. The Rock stunners always look terrible. Austin covered, and there was no referee for the count. Kurt Angle runs down to the ring, hits Austin in the head with the WWF title. The crowd cheered for that, and then The Rock hit a rock bottom on Austin to win the match. At the 45-minute mark, the crowd is going banana. So The Rock eliminates Steve Austin as Kurt Angle turns on the Alliance. I gave this match 5 stars. I thought it was awesome, and it's mainly because of, like, the final 20 minutes where literally it was just nonstop, just incredible action. The victory meant that the WWF continued to exist while the Alliance is officially dead. I don't think anybody watching the show thought the Alliance was going to win, but it would have been interesting twist if they did. The match was a comeback story, since The Rock was able to lead his team back if they were down 2-4 late in the match. the match felt to me like a big deal the entire time. But, you know, once it got down to Austin Rock, it felt even more special. So to me, that was, it was great. The big turn came at the end with Angle, you know, doing that cheap shot on Austin. Just like Vince McMahon said, something was going to happen. He said it, he guaranteed it, and it happened. It's nice, kind of like when storylines kind of play out the way they did, and it worked. It was done well. So what did you guys think of the main event?
I thought it was really good. Now this was the end of the invasion angle, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, thank God. I've made it. I've made it very known to you guys and on this show, the invasion just did nothing really for me. I mean, like the initial invasion and then like Austin being in charge, it did nothing for me. So, but I think this pay-per-view was really good for the most part. And I thought this match was great.
Yeah.
You know, so, mm-hmm. I mean, even though I had Big Show in it and he was, lumbering around like a fool.
Yeah. George, how about you?
Yeah. I mean, I as Survivor Series matches go, I really liked it. And the fact that, you know, the livelihood of both companies was on the line kind of raised the stakes and gave it a little bit more meaning to it. I didn't mind Kurt turning because you kind of saw it from a mile away, but they should have, rather than just have him come down and just hit Austin with the belt, they should have had him come down while like Austin had the Rock down and then have it seem like Angle was, you know, waiting for Rock to get back up to hit him with the belt. And then he hits Austin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good and point. Just kind of gives the Rock a wink and then gets out of the ring and walks away.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would have done, but you know, I don't book, so it doesn't really matter.
But by the way, it's just crazy to think about these things when you go back in like 2001 and 02. This was Austin's last Survivor Series match as an active wrestler.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Like, wow. Just crazy to think about that. It's been 21 years since Stone Cold wrestled in Survivor Series.
That is wild.
It's unbelievable. Vince McMahon appears on the ramp. He had his arms raised. He tossed his jacket to the ground. He had a big smile on his face as JR closed the show, noting that the WWF won. You know, the way things went after this, you know, Austin ended up becoming a babyface again. Vince was a heel that favored Kurt Angle because Angle helped WWF win. Jericho was elevated as a top heel when he, you know, became the first ever undisputed champion, which he's, you know, bragged about for 20 years now.
And who did he beat in the same night for that? Because I don't think I remember. He never says.
I believe it was
Big Show and Kane. I believe it was Daniel Garcia and Willie Yuta.
Well, that doesn't make sense. I don't think they were born yet.
So the show had a runtime of about 2 hours and 40 minutes. So here we go. A couple final thoughts here before we head out. So in covering a lot of these pay-per-views and looking at from 2001, I thought like what is maybe the stupidest booking decision the company's ever done? A lot of things come to my mind, but the first thing I say is that ending this invasion in just 4 months was probably among the stupidest things that they've probably ever done. It could have lasted, again, and we talked about this, this could have been a 2 or 3 year thing if it was really planned out correctly. Instead, I felt like it was completely rushed. It lacked so much star power because, again, a lot of WCW's massive names were under expensive contracts to sit at home and do nothing for like another year. You know,
and then when did I don't mean to cut you off. When did Flair debut in terms of time period after this? Because he was there before,
literally the next night.
Oh, it was the next night.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Like, that's ridiculous that they couldn't somehow coax him. Like,
well, maybe that's why they were in Flair Country, because they knew Raw was going to be in Charlotte like the next night.
Because I knew it wasn't long after this. I didn't realize it was the next night. So yeah, that makes sense. Because there was that somebody had bought half or. Yeah, somebody bought like half the company or something. That's what it was.
Yeah, so this is why this makes me mad. And you guys will understand. I'm sure you know. But this is why the invasion thing should have waited like 8 months. Keep in mind, after this angle ended, The very next night, Ric Flair, Mr. WCW himself, is on Raw. 3 months after this, WWE brings in Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, and Scott Hall. Mm-hmm. If this angle kept going for three more months, these guys would have been a massive factor in this.
Oh, yeah.
And we wouldn't have gotten – I mean, we wouldn't have gotten Rock Hogan, unfortunately. But, you know, this would have been so much maybe more meaningful from a storyline arc for, like, a couple years. In July of 2002, Eric Bischoff gets brought into WWF. In November 2002, Scott Steiner comes back. In March of 2003, here comes Bill Goldberg. So it's
amazing.
So just imagine where this invasion could have been in 10
Chris,
months.
You're also forgetting in, you know, in 2 months' time, Triple H is back with the company as he comes back in the Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. A few months after that,
Shawn Michaels
is back with the company. You could have had when Ric Flair shows up the next night on Raw, you could have had him, you know, talk about how he was the consortium that Shane and Stephanie sold their stock to. And then you can have him look at Vince and be like, now it's time for the real invasion to start.
Right.
And then you could have stretched that out. And then by the time you get to SummerSlam 2002, which I wouldn't want to change anything about it. It's a perfect pay-per-view from top to bottom. But instead of having Triple H versus Shawn, you could have had NWO versus DX.
Mm-hmm. God, well, that would have been unbelievable.
For me, I think the only way the invasion could have ended had the big names been involved with it. The only way it could have ended is Hogan turning on them.
That doesn't work for me, brother.
Well, think about it though. Hogan comes back into the company, you know, you do the NWO storyline, and then you have the big payoff at Mania or Survivor Series, because you can do, let's say, Survivor Series 2002, something like that. And it ends with him turning on WCW because he's back in the company that he built with McMahon. And what a more poetic way. Then you can easily just turn and be like, yeah, I was always there to destroy and end at WCW, and I succeeded in my mission. Like, that would have probably been the only way you could have ended that invasion if they were involved, would be Hogan ultimately turning on him and ending him. You know, that's really where it would have been.
Yeah. And you could have had Hogan say, well, I thought I killed WCW once at Bash at the Beach in 2000, but I guess I was wrong.
But yeah, like, to me, like, this whole WCW-WWF feud should have lasted 2 or 3 years. Instead, it was literally started and wrapped up in 4 months. Like, what
the build could have been a lot better. You know, like, they could have started bringing in, like, the younger guys, and then that's when you bring in, you know, like George kind of said, you bring in Flair, and then you're slowly starting to bring in the bigger names. And then after like an 18-month program, it just, you know, it blows off. Not blows off like it's bad, but I'm saying, like, that's where the culmination is.
For
but
sure.
It was just like they wanted the rush. I felt like it almost feels like that, like, Vince absorbed some of the contracts and was just like, well, what do we do with these guys that who don't want to sit home and wrestle or don't want to sit home and collect a paycheck? So let's just put, you know, Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare, you know, plant Stasiak and stuff like that, like, in a stable, you know.
But even like with Flair, you could have still run where, like, Flair was running Raw and Vince was running SmackDown, but then you could have just started seeing these guys showing up. You know, you got, you know, the NWO showing up, and, you know, Goldberg shows up, and all, like, all these WCW guys, you know, just kind of showing up, and then you're like, hey. Something kind of doesn't, you know, it's where it seems like something's going on, but you're not quite sure until then. Rick's just like, now it's WCW. Mm-hmm. You know, where Rick, since he's running Raw, slowly turns Raw into Nitro.
Yeah. God, we'll talk about that in the show. That's going to be like a 2 or 3 parter, because we can break that down in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. All right. So, guys, out of 10, George, what do you give the show?
I'm gonna go 7.
Okay.
Had some really enjoyable matches. I thought there were a couple matches that were filler, even though Christian, Al Snow were really good. It really didn't need to happen. I mean, the build for that happened on Sunday Night Heat, literally an hour before the fucking show started.
Yeah. Dean?
I give it about 7.5. I thought it was really a pretty good pay-per-view.
Yeah. So I gave it an 8. I thought it was an awesome show. Most people forget about the undercard with good reason. But, you know, I felt the Edge versus Test, the Dudleys versus the Hardys were really good. And I thought the main event just absolutely delivered. So I really enjoyed that. And just being able to see The Rock in Austin again, like kind of one-on-one for a little bit, was just – you're always going to jump like a letter grade in my eyes, you know, when you get to see that kind of stuff. So, yeah, this is Survivor Series 2001. Next week, we'll be covering one of my favorites, and that's, you know, from a personal point of view, Survivor Series 2002, which took place at Madison Square Garden. That was the birth of the Elimination Chamber, the very first one ever, headlined by Shawn Michaels returning and winning the World Heavyweight Championship. So we will get
to his greatest ring attire ever.
Oh, it's the best. I love it.
Hey, so Chris, what I wanted to say during the show was today's the 25th anniversary of the Montreal Screwjob. Mm-hmm. Do you know it was unveiled just today that after Bret Hart spit in the face of Vince McMahon, he said, and you can get that through that piece of shit, Bill Goldberg.
Oh my God. That's so good. It's just, it's amazing. So yeah, happy 25th anniversary to the single greatest moment in professional wrestling history. I mean, yeah, other than the NWO being created, man, that Montreal Screwjob really set forth a lot of things.
Well, sure. I wouldn't call it the greatest.
Oh, thing. No.
Because,
no,
like, it's
creation, I mean, of the NWO is the greatest thing to ever happen.
I mean, I would say, one of the most pivotal moments of wrestling.
Oh, for sure.
For sure. I don't put it up as one of, like, the greatest moments, though, because I was a Bret Hart fan. I mean, I was a Shawn fan, too, course. But, like, to me, I look at it, go, that was the end of Bret's career, because Bret and WCW was just not good. I mean, he was good. But they didn't know. They absolutely had no idea how to use a guy with his talents. They were like, you want to lead the NWO 2000 with your major concussion because of that piece of shit Bill Goldberg kicking it in?
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to Survivor Series 02 next week. A lot to unpack there.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah, it should be good. And then after that, we're going to be covering Survivor Series 2003. So we're going right in a row here. And in between all of that, we'll probably get out Survivor Series 2000 because that was a really good show. And that was basically the height, like the peak of the Attitude Era. So looking forward to getting that one out there to you guys eventually. Hot Tag Podcast on Instagram. If you guys want to check out the other podcast that I do, it's called On the Bump. It airs, we record it every Sunday and it goes out Sunday night. So definitely check that out. Really appreciate, you know, the downloads there are almost catching what I do here. So it's absolutely amazing. I'm only 17 episodes into that. So it's a lot of fun. We got the Multiverse Movie Podcast, took a week off. You guys will be back this week, next week.
Next Monday.
Monday.
Back with Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Awesome. It's actually like one of those like movies that like it's, I love it. If it's on TV, I'm going to watch it.
It's evergreen. Absolutely.
It is. Absolutely. It really is.
Also, Station 007 has got a podcast show coming up next week, too.
Oh, thank God.
I mean, actually, they're going to have back-to-back shows. Well, you're going to be on the Die Another Day review, mm-hmm. We'll record that at some point next week, probably.
Yeah. Got me.
I guess I have to watch it.
Yeah, deal with it, George.
Yeah.
Station 007 has back-to-back shows because we forgot to record last week.
I've told this to people before, and like I listen to a lot of podcasts and a lot of different kinds of them. For some reason, I don't know what it is. I think your guys' best work is Station 007. I've always said that since episode one. So I love that episode, not because you guys are, you know, my best friends, but I just love listening to a Bond podcast because I still think to this day it's unlike anything that's out there in the marketplace. So I love listening to it. So definitely check out Station 007, guys, and the Multiverse Movie Podcast. And we hope you guys have a great rest of your week.
Actually, Chris, I forgot. We need you available for two shows next week. I forgot because we're doing Another Day for... Mm-hmm. Station 007, and we're doing the first Spider-Man.
Oh, cool.
Because it's the 20th anniversary this year, and we forgot to do it in May. So,
well, I mean, it looks like I'm going to have more free nights since starting next week. I will have a new job to which I am only working mornings.
We'll be recording every single night next week.
next week is going to be fun. I can't wait. So look out for a lot of all three of us next week. Can't wait for that. All right. I'm Chris.
Pants optional.
Agreed. That's George Rogers and Dean Holzapfel. I hope you guys have a great rest of your week and weekend. Have a good one. Bye-bye.